Our next section is on the art of spiritual conversation. Notice I call it an art. I would first like to describe spiritual conversation. I would understand by spiritual conversation as conversation in which two or more people are engaged, whose purpose is to share information and ideas about the things of God. Notice, it is conversation between two or more people. Secondly, it is spiritual conversation where, notice the purpose, the intention, is to share information or ideas about the things of God. It's the same definition pretty much that I use for spiritual reading. I think in many circles, spiritual reading is understood to be reading whose purpose is, well, somehow to learn more about the spiritual life. Whereas, strictly speaking, reading is spiritual, or your conversation is spiritual. Not only because I have a spiritual motive or a religious purpose. The content of what I read must be religious or spiritual. Or here, the conversation is about the things of God. Spiritual conversation is therefore one whose content is to share ideas and information about the things of God. Why is spiritual conversation important? I have three reasons. It is important because I consider this the principal way of developing community life. A community is not just a group of people who happen to be living together. Whatever else a community is a community, if it's authentic, of love. Well, now, the essence of love is sharing. What is more precious to share than myself, especially what is deepest and dearest in my life? From childhood, mothers tell me, a child knows that it can share certain things with some people and not with others. Did you know that? And it measures. I watched little babies, well, 2 years old, that's still a baby. A mother introduces me to the child. Sometimes I may make a hit with the child, and sometimes I don't. And I've seen youngsters of two say hello to father. They will just purse their lips. We talk with those we love. And with everybody else, We just use words. You know what I'm saying? This again, we learned in the novitiate from St. Ignatius. There are times to keep silence. And a good thing, because otherwise, most people don't have that much, you might say, spiritual wisdom on their minds that they can talk about the things of God for 8-10 hours a day. They just run dry. But when you talk, be sure that your conversation is spiritual. So that's the main reason. Or shall I say the first reason? To develop community life. Secondly, it is absolutely necessary in the apostolate. And I would say, this is one of the first things that a young religious, depending on how, you might say, secluded they were during their early years of formation, and there's a difference between the kind of people and the interest that people have, or there should be a difference, within the community and outside. Well, if they have not been trained in the art of spiritual conversation in the community, you can't expect them to engage in much spiritual conversation with anybody else. Now, there are many other ways of engaging the apostolate. All kinds of apostolic work in which religious may engage. But I know of none that is more ready at hand, more constantly available, and I would even say more effective than for a religious, no matter in whose company he or she is, to be able easily, immediately, and effectively to talk about the things of God. People expect this from us. And they're surprised, not to say shocked, when they don't get it. In other words, the apostolate of conversation is a second reason why developing this art of spiritual conversation is so important. And a third is, and this in a way is the fundamental reason, it is mainly through spiritual conversation that the faith is first of all obtained, preserved, defended, and developed. There's a Latin phrase in St. Paul which is so basic that on it, without exaggeration, everything else in Christianity rests. The phrase in St. Paul's Latin is fides ex auditu. Remember the context, where Paul is describing how no one can be saved without faith. Unless we believe in God and the fact that God the Father, sent his Son to redeem the world, we will not be saved. That's St. Paul. And then he says, but if no one can be saved without believing, how will they believe unless somebody tells them, unless somebody teaches? And how will anybody teach? Well, first, no one will believe unless they first hear. How will anyone hear unless someone else speaks? And that's why there must be apostles whose purpose, listen to this, apostolane in Greek means to send. The essence of an apostle is one who is sent to speak. That's revealed truth. The main function of an apostle is to speak. Speak of what? Speak of God? Speak of Christ? Speak of what God has revealed to mankind. That's why God, the Word of God, came into the world. So this Word might speak. And if what Christ spoke, we believe, we have the faith. It's both as simple and as fundamental as that. Okay. Now, the trouble with our, I would say, commonplace understanding of this well-known phrase of St. Paul is, we think of this speaking, which means there won't be any healing unless somebody talks. We think of it only, or at least more or less exclusively, for getting the faith in the first place. In other words, for the origin of faith. We must hear, which means someone else must speak. One who believes speaks. One who does not yet believe hears. And thereby, get it? Thereby, by hearing, the one who had not yet believed starts believing. There is no faith in the world. Doesn't exist unless it entered the soul of the believer through his or her ears. And for the deaf mutes, the next best by writing. Now it's common sense. We recognize it, even in baptism. A child, for example, does not yet have the use of reason. The waters of baptism, we know, poured on the child's head, words pronounced, the virtue of faith is infused. But why? Only because somebody already believes, does the baptizing. So, there's no faith in anyone except from hearing. But second, it is not only for the origin of faith that, let's get this, so there must be speech which leads to hearing, which leads to faith. A believer's speech is passed on to another who does not yet believe. This is the universal, providentially established way of supernatural procreation. As the children of God are conceived. Right? They're conceived through speech. And we even speak of our thoughts as conceptions, don't we? That we conceive. Okay. Now, it's not only, in other words, this speech by a believer and hearing by someone else, first of all, begins the faith, starts the faith, but preservation take a child, baptized, perfectly valid baptism. Parents die. It is reared by two unbelievers. What's going to happen? It will die out, right? You see what we're saying? This is so important. So the preservation, the speech must continue. Believers must keep talking belief. Must keep talking faith. Okay. Defense of the faith. Because the worst enemy or critic of our faith is our own reason. Because what we believe we cannot comprehend. Today's Feast of the Holy Trinity. Who can comprehend the Trinity? So the mind is constantly objecting. As a child grows, the mind becomes more critical of what is on the mind, all right. But it keeps asking, why? Why? How? So someone who has the faith and perhaps has struggled with his or her own faith can help another to defend their faith before the bar of reason. And finally, for growth. Associating with believing people is the normal way in God's providence that we grow in the faith. Do you believe that? We got to associate with believers. Now, in my job, I have to associate with some people who are not believers, but then I don't tell them, but I run away as soon as I can to be in the company of others who have the faith. And not just to be kind of near them, to kind of saddle up to them, but with a person who has the faith, talks about the faith, shares the faith. For example, my now 7 years of working with Mother Teresa and with her sisters has strengthened my faith immensely. And I'm not really sure who's doing more good to whom. You know what I'm saying? That's number two on the importance of spiritual conversation. Have I lost anyone here? Sister? Okay. Now, some recommendations. We're talking about the art of spiritual conversation. I've got 4 recommendations. Cultivate what I call a spiritual memory. Psychologists tell us we remember what we want to remember. And it's remarkable what things we can forget. I'm introduced to a person. An hour later, I forget what the person's name was. They're hardly flattered. They made such a deep impression that I forgot their name. In other words, try to have spiritual things on your mind, which I would say is one of the main apostolic purposes of recollection. And Christ tells us, from the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. You see the import of that statement? You're going to talk about what's on your mind. And if my mind is cluttered with all sorts of profane and secular interests, as sure as I'm a human being, I'm going to talk about what's on my mind. So cultivate what I call a spiritual memory. Secondly, conversation by definition involves at least one other person. now, the more I have on my mind of spiritual things, the more I should anticipate what I am to say to this person. So anticipate what you're going to say. One reason that I allow when I get a telephone call, depending on whom the call is from, but generally, especially if I'm not expecting the call, but generally I'm not, I let the person talk. Give me a chance to anticipate what to say. Does that make sense? Otherwise, you're liable to say the worst thing. Maybe all right for somebody else, but not to this person. So what to say? Let me tell you, you can never unsay anything. What has been said has been said. You can apologize, you can excuse, I didn't mean it, forget it. But the more you emphasize forget it, you're just putting it that much more firmly on their minds. So anticipate what you're going to say. And if you've been preoccupied with profane or secular things, say a moment before, recollect yourself. I say put yourself for a moment in God's presence, which is one reason I've just found it common sense. It's just the right thing to do. I never start teaching without first praying. When you sit down to a meeting with somebody, people, gosh, in the last 3 days I had a number of private conferences. As far as I know, with everyone, I said, how about a little prayer? To ask for light, what to say? Third recommendation. Anticipate whom you're talking to or whom you will be talking to. Now, this is different than what to say, because there's a way of saying the same thing in a different way to different people. Does that make sense? And fourthly, anticipate a purpose. In general, I would say, never talk without a purpose. I think the main reason why people waste so much time in useless conversation, they don't pause for a moment, especially in God's presence, to ask themselves, why should I engage in a conversation with this person? Do I want to persuade the person? Do I want to dissuade the person? And by the way, for all the efforts we're making at persuasion, let's realize that the apostate is also dissuasion. You know what I'm saying? People are doing things that are wrong. I try to dissuade them. Or they plan to do something. There's a big difference. Finally, three recommendations. First, we shall be as effective spiritual conversationalists as we are people of prayer. My formula is, the only one who can easily and effectively engage in spiritual conversation with people is one who is in the habit of conversation with God. So much so that our conversation will become an extension of our prayer of your wish. An interlude between periods of prayer. And all I can tell you is, you can tell the difference. And even though two people, A and B, may both be engaging in what we call spiritual conversation, talking about the things of God. Well, both may be talking about the things of God, but the one will be talking about these as one who has engaged in conversation with God about what he is sharing with others. And the other person might just as well be talking about the weather. Prayer. Secondly, and this is a large subject. In fact, I spent 3 lectures when I began teaching theology to my Jesuit scholastics. I would give them 3 lectures on just this second subject, the second, you might say, requirement that I'm sharing with you. Get into the habit of classifying your thoughts. Whatever word you want to use, call it systematize your thinking. Organize your thinking. Classify. Categorize. Have the equivalence of a finding system in your mind. Now, this may sound silly, but I assure you it's not. Now, this will take years of planning and constant, you might say, improvement. That my ideas are somehow organized. They're not just one big jumble. Now, they're going to be a jumble in conversation if there are a jumble in my mind. Now, here I could just, we could spend, as I say, 3 hours now. But note-taking, keeping things, say, in a card system, keeping a journal, having some system where I don't just acquire information or just have reflection, say, as a result of meditation, but I go to some trouble to plan, to break up into pieces. You see, by now, different people have different ways, but by now I think I've revealed enough of myself to you people to know that, well, I'm not sure it's a good mind that I have. All I know is that it's an organized mind. Am I making sense? Because unless we go to some trouble to classify, to systematize, to sift, to separate, when we come to speak, and I come back to our Lord's statement, from the abundance of the heart, the mouth will speak. And Christ could just as well have said, from the emptiness of the heart, the mouth will speak. From the jumble of the heart, the mouth will speak. From the confusion of the heart, the mouth will speak. Do you know what I'm trying to get across?
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.